So we're going to cut out right now and go to the commissioner's meeting. This is Don Trethaway. I'll be right back after the meeting. And this is KPTZ Port Townsend, kptz.org on the World Wide Web.
I believe Hurricane Rand
yes.
closed altogether.
And this is Philip Morley, and I had a conversation with the new board director, Aaron Berg, this weekend, and I know that the board is considering what to do about operations at the Point Hudson RV campground that the port operates. So that's under consideration.
Well, I think it's good direction. Almost far enough. All right. We're at 9:45 now, so Vicki, if you'd like to take it away and give us an update on the coronavirus and COVID-19.
Thank you. I would be happy to do that. I am Vicki Kirkpatrick, Director of Jefferson County Public Health. And as you probably have read through our weekend updates, that we now have 7 lab-confirmed cases in Jefferson County, and we believe that we now also have community transmission, some of those occurred within Jefferson County. And you might recall, as we began this journey, that Dr. Locke talked about the phases that we will be going through. And the first phase is the containment phase, and that's what we've been doing, which is identifying the cases of confirmed coronavirus and contacting all of the contacts of those cases and placing people in quarantine, awaiting that 14-day period. In the absence of confirmed community transmission, that is the typical public health approach, and to the extent that we can do that in the community, it's very effective. However, we knew that the day would come when we would have community transmission. We just didn't know exactly when that might happen, and I think we're here at this point, so that we're now in phase 2. And so the decisions around the appropriate approach ratchet up fairly significantly to include the kinds of things that the governor has included in his declarations. It becomes, we begin then to sort of close in on restricting some of the personal freedoms that we enjoy as under normal circumstances and create sort of a new normal. And so it becomes significantly more important that people, particularly people at high risk, that they don't congregate in large groups, particularly among strangers. It's, you know, if you know where you've been and who you've been with, etc., there's more chance to be prudent around it. But when you're going to the grocery store, for example, or to some other place, and you don't know the people who are there, it's better to avoid those kinds of situations if at all possible, and we may be moving towards even more restrictive mitigation measures than what currently exist, as you were just talking about. But this is really the time for people to be very mindful, not only of themselves, but out of concern for their neighbors and other people. So, for example, if you are going to the grocery store, you know, recognize that the stores can do a lot, but there is some responsibility in assuring that you're distancing yourself. Or if it's extremely busy at a particular time, stretching out when people go to the grocery store and some of those kinds of things, because clearly we have to have food. The businesses that are open are struggling to figure out how to maintain business along with making sure that it's safe to do so. So we are in a different phase, and we will be in this phase until we reach the peak of hopefully a much flattened curve and start, going down the other side. But I wanted to also remind folks that a lot has happened, and while it feels like a really long time, it's been a very short time. And I thought I would just go through a couple of things, On March 11th, and this is the 23rd, so not that long ago, on March 11th, the governor issued an emergency proclamation that limited large events to minimize the public health risk during COVID-19. On March 12th, the governor announced school closings in King, Snohomish, and Pierce County through April 24th. On March 13th, the governor announced statewide school closures and expand protocols for adult family homes and extends the ban on large gathering to the entire state. He also announced restrictions for higher education and training programs. On March 16th, the governor announced the statewide shutdown of all restaurants, bars, and entertainment and recreational facilities, as well as additional limits on large gatherings. Through March 31st. The governor stated that if we are living a normal life, we are not doing our jobs as Washingtonians. We can't do that anymore. We need to make changes, regardless of size. All of us need to do more. We must limit the number of people we come in contact with. This is the new normal. And at this point, it said this ban does not include grocery stores or pharmacies. It does include, and then it listed a whole long list of those that it included, takeout and delivery and drive-through food and beverages are not banned. And then there was statewide guidance for social distancing. Businesses are expected to ensure adequate environmental cleaning of their stores and must designate an employee or officer to implement a social distancing plan for their business. Grocery stores and pharmacies. Supply chain is strong, and overbuying takes food and other supplies away from those people who need it now. The ban was extended to include, not limited to, and we heard these, theaters, bowling alleys, gyms, fitness centers, non-tribal card rooms, museums, art galleries, tattoo parlors, barber, hair salons, nail salons. And the ban was reduced for gatherings to 50 and requires gatherings of under 50 to meet the CDC guidelines for public health and social distancing, or they too are banned. On March 18th, the governor announced relief for businesses, workers, renters, utility ratepayers, flexibility for tax collection, and cash assistance for families. You can also see that, so you can see from Wednesday, March 11th through Wednesday, March 18th, all of those changes occurred. And it left our community, our businesses, and our governments scrambling to make sure that we can all comply with those government, the governor's orders. So Jefferson County and every other county across the state was experiencing the same sort of thing. And it's a social disruption, and it calls for a change in how we behave, both individually, and institutionally, and commercially. And the entire public health and healthcare system is trying to work in unprecedented ways in modern history. And so the reaction to this is strong and it's swift. But it's also important to understand that in order for us to have been on the spot, ready to go with everything that was necessary, it would require a continual staffing up and supply chain that would probably be unsustainable and certainly far more than what is needed in a normal situation. So we've seen the federal government release over time the strategic national stockpile and getting it out to the states that are hit the worst, Washington being one of those. We know that there are shortages. Because this is a pandemic, the businesses that create our personal protective equipment and all of the things that are needed in the healthcare system around the world have been stretched to the limit as well. And so that really places additional pressure on individuals to really take the requests around and the expectations around social distancing seriously. And as the governor said, these things are it is a declaration, it is a law, there can be enforcement, but his comment was, we would hope as a society that we would step up and do that without the threat of enforcement. That is a next step at some point. If we don't step up and begin to engage in taking care of ourselves and taking care of those around us and protecting those around us. Based on the availability or in the current situation, the lack thereof of testing supplies throughout the state, testing criteria is subject to change. And I know a lot of people are asking, why aren't we doing more testing? Why isn't everyone able to get a test? In the absence of testing supplies, criteria and prioritization has to occur. And that's the natural way that occurs for any kind of medical. And so it is subject to change. As testing materials become more available, testing will increase. And it will be more available. And we can potentially test everyone that has symptoms if we can get there. But right now, we have to test those that are most vulnerable, that are sick with the illness, and ask others who are having symptoms to please self-isolate and take care, because we don't have the ability to test everyone at this point. From a public health perspective, we would love to have everyone tested, because what that provides us is the ability to see the pattern of the disease in the community. And from an epidemiological perspective, that's wonderful information, and it is predictive then as we move forward. And certainly would help in the future. So we would love to see as much testing as possible, but that's not the situation that we're in right now. Although it is really heartening to see the number of people and organizations who want to step up and create more of that, of the protective, personal protective equipment, and businesses willing to retool and to provide more hand sanitizer or more PPE for our healthcare system and community.
Yeah. On that, I had a request from the community, people offering to, you know, a bunch of people want to come together and make PPE, masks and things. Is that something that...
Not together, to be clear.
Not separately. Not separately, yeah. Come together virtually in one task to make PPE. Is that something that is... useful? Are there standards that would make those homemade PPE usable by the healthcare industry?
One of the best things for the homemade masks, they are beneficial, and they're particularly beneficial for the people who are at home, but not sick enough to be hospitalized, but still need care for them to wear, because it will protect from the droplets. And that would then save the manufactured to a particular healthcare worker level. It would save those masks then for use by the healthcare system. And so, yes, it would be, those can be very helpful. And in fact, if we don't have it already, we may put up on our website, I think one of the hospital systems in King County actually has patterns for making masks, and we have been actually talking among county folks within, you know, around those who, we have a lot of people in the community who sew and are great. And if they have a pattern, there are a lot of folks who could definitely make masks. And so we want, we would like to see those patterns available. And then we would need someplace, whether it's the EOC or the, you know, the faith community, whoever it might be, to coordinate the distribution of those into the community for the in and into the hands of people who need them.
So currently you don't see Public Health or Jefferson Healthcare serving in that role, but there could be a community-based effort separate to do that.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
I do. I think that would be, and I know of people who have already responded in the county saying that they would be happy to do, you know, to make masks. And we certainly can talk with, and really can speak to this as well, about how we go about coordinating, you know, getting those out to folks who need them and can use them. Because to the extent possible, we really need to keep the surgical masks, the N95s, and those for our healthcare workers, because this is going to be, as Dr. Locke says, a marathon and not a sprint, which means we need our healthcare workers to be well and able to go to work every day. And that's critically important. And as he also says, they're the ones on the front lines who are bringing these sick people to them and are you know, taking care. They need to take care of themselves and have adequate protection so that they can take care of those who are critically ill or ill and in our hospital. So
one more thing on that, sorry. When we get that community effort stood up, is that the kind of link that we can put on the public health website?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and before we get too far from testing, so I think there's a lot of concern and uncertainty around that issue right now. I've heard that there's quite a delay in getting results right now. Can you confirm that and talk about kind of why that's happening and the how that changes kind of your the way that you look at test results or the timing of things? Does that have kind of other ripple effects?
It does, in the sense that, yeah, and there is a time lag. You know, we always like between, you know, typically it's 24 hours for the, sort of the ongoing communicable disease in the community. 48 hours is good. We are now seeing tests come back as long as 5 to 6 or 7 days later.
But to clarify, in that time, if someone has a test, they're staying at home,
yes,
or in self-quarantine while that,
yes,
test is going on.
Absolutely.
So while we're behind in our data, we're stopping at each testing.
Exactly. We are asking people to stay home, and we are asking people that are close contacts of the person being tested to also not, you know, try to restrict their activity in the community and to self-quarantine for those 14 days from the last contact. If they are family members, they need to be also quarantined in the home and to a certain extent maintain that continued distance even from the person who has been tested. Once that test comes back, if it's negative, that's lifted. If it's positive, then and if it's positive, then public health, you know, talks with the case, talks with all of the contacts, talks with everyone that person has come in contact with, to the extent that that's known, and everyone will then be isolated, or not isolated, but I'm sorry, quarantined. And if they begin to exhibit symptoms, then there's follow-up to that as well. I mean, this is it's classic public health intervention and public health work. And it's also important to know that when we're talking about contacts, you know, when we contact someone as a follow-up, it's not a checkbox that we've contacted them. Those interviews are extensive and they take a very, very long time to do. Each one of them takes a long time. And in addition to that, we're providing instruction and advice and those and answering a lot of questions. And people, naturally, many people are frightened when they get or very concerned when they get that positive test result, particularly if they fit into those high risk for complications category. So I think it's important to understand that so for every case, depending upon the number of specific contacts, it's many, many hours of work related to that specific case. We are in the health department now beginning to look at what's our bench strength and how do we add and increase the number of people who can be redirected from other jobs that they're doing right now at the health department to begin to support that. Because as we see more and more cases, it's exponentially more and more difficult to make all of those contacts. But that is what public health does. I mean, that is one of the core functions that we provide in the event of an emergency. I think that in this case, as much information and as much as we can place on our website, we try to, we want to do that. We share a lot of links. Information came in, I saw yesterday, from Department of Commerce around some specific help geared specifically for business.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend.
A link on our website that specifically says, on our COVID page, that says for businesses, and that's where we would be putting information and things for businesses, for other types of organizations. This particular offer, if you will, coming from the Department of Commerce, I think would be very helpful for businesses to take a look at. And you probably have seen it in your inbox as well. Mm-hmm. It's a time when, as the governor said, we are in a new normal because we just can't continue to believe that we don't, that particularly if you're young and without symptoms. Or symptoms are very mild. It's very hard when you have something that is like a flu or a cold to hear how serious it is. But I want to be clear that that people who are experiencing mild symptoms, it is just important for them to isolate and quarantine and distance as it is for anyone else because they can transmit. And the person they transmit to may end up having very serious complications. And so it's a responsibility that we all share as members of the Jefferson County community. And so while I don't have a whole lot of new things to talk about, I wanted to take the opportunity to really stress how critically important it is that everyone, regardless of age, pay attention to the the social distancing and the respiratory etiquette and the sanitizing and washing hands frequently and all of those things that we've been hearing about since we entered into this whole phase, which is hopefully in the long run we will all be more aware of the importance of washing hands and things like that because that helps for any kind of communicable disease that we're experiencing. But we are still in that phase of basically retooling our lives and retooling our businesses and organizations and governments to try to do the best that we can for this to slow the spread and keep people safe.
Do we expect to be getting more testing supplies?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I know
the question is when exactly, but yes.
Right. Okay. Is that through the federal initiative to get more supplies out?
Yes. I mean, as the healthcare system and public health make those orders, they go up through our EOC to the state, and from the state to the region, and from the region to the national, for releasing additional portions of the national stockpile. And the companies that are making those testing kits, and at this point, you know, we have a significant shortage of the swabs. They are ramping up, but in the president's press briefing, he said that he does not want the federal government to compete with the states, and so there was an encouragement for the states, which I know our state is in talks with those manufacturing companies to get orders delivered directly as well, to the extent that that's possible. And they're able to meet that. So it's kind of on a day-by-day basis in terms of the availability. Just remembering that we've been more fortunate than some states in that we had the first case and we saw more cases a lot more quickly. So we were high on the list of getting things from the national stockpile, but it is now in every state, and New York has surpassed Washington, not unsurprisingly given the population, and you know California is close on the heels, and we will start seeing, and so the demand is increasing, and it's huge. It's also heartening to see that distillers are retooling to make hand sanitizers and make that available. And I think we may see that with masks and a lot of other things. But right now, it's in addition to the PPE, the testing materials are also critically important.
Thanks, Vicki. David, did you have a question?
Vicki, just wanted to know if you thought the interventions that the health department's doing when they do quarantine somebody, when they do this extensive survey, is that having an impact? Are people complying with the direction? Because enforcement is virtually impossible to do on a case-by-case basis, it seems.
You're right. It is extremely difficult. And, you know, that's when you bring in law enforcement. Ultimately, you have to bring in law enforcement if you're going to try to enforce on the mandate to isolate and quarantine. Our experience is that people are, when they've been asked to isolate or when they've been asked to quarantine, they are complying. I think the greater concern is those that are not sick or are not experiencing strong symptoms, which we wouldn't know because we don't have a confirmation of a case, but just to assume that, we need to assume that it's out circulating in the community and act accordingly. For the, like I said, Commissioner, the people that we talk to that are experiencing symptoms or awaiting test results, or have been confirmed, have been very compliant, very willing to go into quarantine.
And you have some regular
check-ins.
And
yes.
Yeah, there's some structure to it. Yeah. They're monitored a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, clearly we can't control all of their movements, et cetera, but they've indicated certainly a willingness not to be out and about in the community and recognizing the importance of that.
Any other questions, David?
No, that's it for now. I just am flashing back on shifts that I worked at hospitals where you were just slammed and running from the moment you walked in the door till the time you left. And my heart just goes out to all the healthcare workers out there that, we one of the reasons that we need to do a lot of these actions is to protect them so that they can continue to work. So.
Great. Thank you, David. We have a question from the press. I'll go ahead.
Yeah, I was hoping you could describe more about phase two and what it means. Like, can the local health jurisdiction require a shelter in place, or does that have to come from the governor?
It doesn't have to come from the governor. It can be done by the local health officer. However, it's in the state's best interest, and the health officers around the state would agree that consistency in orders is important around the state, so that we don't create discrepancies and different rules for different counties. And because what that can end up being is part of what some of the concerns have been expressed by local health jurisdictions, which is seeing rapid movement from one county to the next in terms of trying to find, you know, if one county says you have to stay home but another county doesn't, people might want to go to that county that doesn't to maintain more freedom. I mean, that's and
but Vicki, isn't that already happening?
It is happening, and that's
at our peril.
It is, and it's something that it's happening on all of the coastal counties are experiencing tremendous influx, and it's unknown whether people are just saying spring break, the kids are home, we're going to take a vacation, or if it's we just want to get out of, someplace. But that is a problem, and that also says that people are not taking these kinds of things seriously, that because if someone is ill or doesn't know that they have the disease or has very mild symptoms, if they're staying at hotels, they're putting other people at risk. And so that's, we may see the governor come out, because as he said in his last press briefing, that if this doesn't work, if this voluntary sort of, self-isolation or quarantine doesn't work, then he will. Then more stringent measures will be put in place, and it's much better to do that. Oh, thank you. It's much better to do that on a statewide basis for consistency than it is county by county. But if that doesn't become the case, and there are some specific issues, then yes, the local health officer has a significant amount of authority to issue orders as well.
And Vicki, this is a question that I'll also ask Willie, so maybe it could help us segue. But if the Board of County Commissioners were considering writing a letter urging the governor to put in place a statewide shelter-in-place order, is that something that you would support or recommend or get behind, or would you rather not say at this point?
I would say I'll do my best to channel Dr. Locke at this point, because he's been pretty clear in his press conferences that are in his updates. He says, for example, that staying home if you are sick means anyone with symptoms of a respiratory infection and or fever must strictly isolate themselves for the duration of their illness and not return to work or social interactions until it has been 72 hours since their last fever and their respiratory symptoms are substantially improved. And that really is with or without testing. Maybe it's the flu, but we won't know if you're not tested. And so it's just as important to assume that it might be COVID-19 and to self-isolate or self-quarantine. And he says this is especially true for children and young adults who may only have mild symptoms. While these populations may have low personal risk of serious complications, their failure to isolate themselves during illness puts high-risk populations at increased risk of life-threatening infections. And about 20% It says current research shows that around 80% of people with COVID-19 have mild to moderate symptoms. Some will be bedridden with flu-like symptoms but will not need supplemental oxygen. 14% will have more severe symptoms with debilitating illness and the need for supplemental oxygen. And 6% will be critically ill and require intensive respiratory support, including high-flow oxygen and mechanical ventilation. And then again, advancing age or chronic disease risk factors increase the chance that an individual will be in that 20% range.
Again, we should move on pretty soon, but I have one more question, and mm-hmm. that's, do we have any new information about asymptomatic transmission?
What the public health folks are talking about, and we are now in phase two, but it looks like that there is some risk of transmission in asymptomatic, particularly in the 2 days prior to the onset of symptoms. So typically when we do contact follow-up, we will ask for the person to provide us with everyone they came in contact with, including the 2 days prior to the onset of the symptoms. And part of the risk of transmission, if they don't have symptoms, of course, they're not coughing and sneezing, and this is primarily a droplet-based disease. But there is always a risk, particularly in very close contact. If you have very close contact with people. But think 2 days prior to the onset of symptoms is a bigger risk for transmission than prior to that. And then, because that's when you're building your viral load. And the higher the viral load, the more shedding and the more opportunity for transmission.
Great. Thank you for all the information. Any last questions, David, before we move on to Willie and the Department of Emergency Management?
No, go ahead.
One quick question. If indeed we are considering this letter to the governor, would you recommend that we wait to talk to Dr. Locke before we take action? Or do you think it is within our purview to...
I think it's completely within your purview.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Vicki. And Willie, you have the floor. How are we doing?
Excellent. Thank you. So real quickly, as we move into this community transmission phase, we are ramping up the Emergency Operations Center to our full capacity. But given the nature of this pandemic, we've had to do it in kind of a unique and new way to us. So as of this morning, we are partially physically staffed here at the EOC with a couple of our select partners, with our planning section and logistics section folks, with the rest of the EOC representatives working remotely. So that way we can maintain quality public health practices physically here at the Emergency Operations Center while still coordinating with all the different groups and entities and agencies and jurisdictions that we need to remotely. But of course, just like with a lot of folks, this remote coordination has proved challenging for us, and we've had some lessons learned as we've learned to operate in this new model, in this new normal that Vicki alluded to earlier. Our two primary priorities at this point in time. One, obviously, with the PPE shortages, we're working closely with the State Emergency Operations Center to get those emergency PPE requests filled. The state, as of just a couple of days ago, they're no longer soliciting requests from individual agencies. We're having to plan kind of as a community our PPE needs 1 week at a time, and then the state is doing their best to fulfill those requests and just kind of getting us enough PPE to move us along. All of those requests are being reviewed by public health experts at the state and given to communities with the most urgent needs in terms of their shortages as well as their confirmed case counts. So we're working on setting up a single point of acquisition and distribution here in the county. Our logistics department is working on that. And we're hoping to have some new PPE into the county within the next 5 to 7 days. Other than that, the next major priority is sheltering, specifically for those who are able to quarantine or isolate on their own due to limited resources, due to any number of reasons that might prevent them. So on that, we're working specifically with OLECAP to try to develop a sheltering plan for those individuals, and we're hoping for some additional progress on that this week. Finally, last but not least, we are trying to take a longer-term view of this problem. We're both, Jefferson Healthcare was working on some modeling in terms of what we can expect in some different scenarios as far as the total surge and the capacity of our health system locally. We talk a lot about the need to flatten the curve. Well, what's an ideal flattened curve look like? What's a kind of middle of the road scenario? And then, what would happen if we really fail to take some of these public health measures seriously and our healthcare system does get, kind of overloaded in a worst case scenario? So we're starting to talk about maximal long-term planning. And then, additionally, we have to think about once this is all over, how does our community, recover as a whole? How do we establish a new normal? How do we recover economically and financially with our small business community? And I know those discussions started last week at the Joint Council and County Commissioners meeting, but we're starting to talk about what emergency management, what the state can do to really support ourselves locally and begin to rebuild once this is passed. So we have some very near-term, extremely urgent priorities, but also trying to keep a little bit of an eye down the road. Just to address the question about the shelter-in-place request, obviously that's within your purview. I still am interested in hearing, Dr. Locke's opinion. Personally, just as the emergency management director, I've made the point before about the paradox of preparedness, as we call it, that ideally we take steps that in hindsight seem like over-preparedness. And, just in my, from where I'm sitting, in my opinion, a step like a statewide shelter-in-place order ideally does seem like over-preparedness in hindsight, but I do worry about not taking that step and then regretting it later on. So I would certainly encourage our county commissioners to take this seriously and look at the idea of looking back and maybe thinking, well, were we over-prepared? Well, it doesn't really matter because we came out of this safely. I also want to say that the state of Washington is looking at coordinating very closely with Oregon, especially given proximity of the states and the interaction that takes place in the Portland and Vancouver metro area. So when we're thinking about what the state of Washington is doing, also just realize that we're also coordinating very closely with the state of Oregon as well.
Thank you, Willie. Any questions for Willie?
I have a couple questions, Willie. Do you see opportunities for businesses to be doing some of the retooling to help with creation of supplies that the EOC might need or the healthcare community?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, FEMA preaches a concept called a whole community response, where, big disasters and events like this affect the whole community, and it really takes the whole community to respond. And so, right now we're still trying to wrap our head around what these specific needs long term are going to be, and still trying to create a mechanism for businesses as well as private individuals to raise their hand and say, hey, I can help out and here's what I can offer. So, right now we have a couple of our DEM volunteers working on a database and a system for private citizens and organizations and businesses to raise their hand and offer help so we can track that, track those offers of help in a coordinated manner and then meet them with the needs very efficiently. OLECAP also has a way for private individuals to step up and offer their support. In the meantime, if you do have, especially if you have a specific idea or specific skill set or resource, don't hesitate to reach out to us at the Department of Emergency Management. And we're kind of slammed as well, but we certainly want to hear what you can do and what you're able to help with, whether it is, potentially sewing masks, or if you do have the ability, maybe have a service organization that can deliver groceries to individuals who can't do it themselves, things like that, whatever you have to offer. Now's the time to speak up and reach out and put that forward.
Great. And I think Commissioner Brotherton has mentioned that that you are considering a new communications protocol or system. Is that something you can speak to, and specifically for the public?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that we do to communicate internally in emergency management with all of our partners and stakeholders is called a SITREP, or situation report. That kind of details the high-level overview of the day's activities and the need to know, so to speak. It's real brief, usually nowhere longer than 1 to 4 pages. What we're going to do starting today is start issuing a community SITREP every day. That's kind of the need to know for the general public. You know, what's going on, what resources are out there, what's the latest updates, what's the latest test count, the most recent recommended public actions. Maybe there's a rumor out there that needs addressing. And so we will have our first community SITREP available by the end of today. It'll be on the Jefferson County Government Facebook page. We'll be posting it to the DEM website and distributing it to a lot of our community partners for outreach via their methods of communication. So you'll see the first one today and then start seeing those every day moving forward. That's kind of your one-stop shop. Because we're hearing that there's both a glut of communication out there, but a lack of communication directly from us here. So this is going to be our kind of singular point of contact, our one-stop shop for everything you need to know about what's going on locally.
Great, thank you. I'm excited about that. Related to that, what can you tell us about the deployment of the National Guard in Washington State?
So right now, the National Guard assets are available for request from local agencies and jurisdictions. But I think one of the big concerns is that the National Guard is going to be deployed to enforce any sort of shelter-in-place orders. And so right off the bat, Governor Inslee did come out on Friday and say he has no immediate plans for a shelter-in-place order. Obviously, I've been telling folks with every day you wake up, it's a new chance for that to happen, just given the speed with which this event is moving. So I would expect a shelter-in-place order in the coming weeks, and we should begin preparing for that. If and when that shelter-in-place order is instituted, though, it's not going to be strictly enforced, especially not by the National Guard. In places like California, where they do have shelter-in-place orders, although they are orders, compliance is encouraged, but they're not, putting law enforcement out on the streets and pulling folks over and enforcing it with a heavy hand. It's more of a very, very strong recommendation. So if and when you do see any sort of National Guard activity in the state, it's likely not going to be for the purpose of law enforcement, but rather with assistance in distributing supplies, assisting in the healthcare industry, things like that.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Willie. David, any questions for Willie?
No.
Okay, great. Yeah, Philip, do you have any questions?
No, thank you, commissioners. I just want to thank Willie for the good work that emergency management is doing, and Vicki Kirkpatrick and Tom Locke for the good work that public health is doing. No questions at this time.
Great, thanks. And I don't have any questions. I think you covered it very well. One, just to share a little bit of good news, I did visit the shelter down at the American Legion that OLACAP operates, which had some tests that were out to see if either a monitor or a resident had COVID-19, and all those tests came back negative. So they were, they were kind of being locked in there, and that is no longer the case. But as we stand up more permanent emergency situations for the unsheltered community, I went out with OLACAP on Saturday and met with the American Legion, and they have agreed to expand the shelter services up to the top floor, to the main stage area, to give a little more space. Because if you look, it's impossible to have social distancing when you have bed to bed to bed. So those efforts are still being stood up, but they're. As dark as these times are, it is really reassuring to see so many people recognizing the emergency and working together to to set up the infrastructure that we're going to need for this.
And thank you also to public health and Jefferson Healthcare, really frontline folks who are working so hard right now. And I know you probably did not get much rest this weekend.
Not much. I actually had a full day off, unlike a couple of the staff. We have one staff person who has not had a day off in the past 14 days.
Wow. Well,
so we're also going to start talking about how we can provide, make sure that every staff person has some rest and relief.
It's critical.
We don't want our staff burning out either.
No. Thank you for all your efforts, public health, Jefferson Healthcare. I mean, there's so many people on the ground doing really important work. So do you have any last words, Vicki?
I don't think so. Just a continued word of encouraging people to really take this seriously, particularly when it doesn't feel serious to you because you're not very sick.
Mm-hmm. 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 Mom and Dad, stay home.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Everybody's mom and dad, stay home.
Yes. Okay. Well,
same time next week?
Same time next week, yeah. We'll continue this as long as it's necessary. Even though it is a fifth Monday, we'll have a special meeting, I think, just for the purpose of this, unless some other emergency comes up. So.
And Dr. Locke will be back
and
next
Dr.
week
Lee
with you.
Be, yes, great.
Thanks
okay.
for pinch hitting.
All right. Thank you very much, Vicki. Thank you, Willie. And we'll...
Thank you, commissioners.
Yes, thank you. We will move on to talk about the county's response to...
This is KPTZ Port Townsend, by the way, kptz.org, World Wide Web. That was a live county commissioner's briefing session. There will be again next Monday another broadcast. We'll carry it live. And throughout the week, this week, we'll carry every notice we get out to you. So stay tuned. Stay tuned to KPTZ. I will, and I hope you will.